All right, boys, what do blow-up dolls, firebirds, and public speaking have in common?
Public speaking and your fear to overcome it.
Yeah, ironically, they do.
That's the first thing I thought of.
I'm sure it's the first thing everybody thought of. If we have you wondering, what the hell are these guys talking about? Well, you are going to have a lot of fun listening to today's episode. It's Alex Lafredo Dietrich.
Thank you for calling Launch and Go. This is Darren.
Darren, this is Deputy Power from the local Sheriff's Department. How are you doing today?
Good, Officer Power. How are you?
Not so good. I've got a Mr. Winnie in custody.
You have Mr. Winnie in custody?
Yes. States Why? He knows you, so obviously you know Mr. Winnie.
Maybe or maybe not. What's
been a little incident at the local grocery store. Called him twerking in the cereal aisle.
Oh, yes, sir.
Could you shine a little light on this?
Well, our guest Alex today was talking about overcoming your fear of public speaking, and Alex at one point actually twerked in the cereal himself. So I think Mr. Winnie may have taken it upon himself to try to do the same.
Why in the hell would somebody twerk in a grocery store naked as a jaybird to get better at public speaking?
I'm sorry. Did you say he was naked twerking?
Did I stutter?
No, officer, but oh my Lord.
Welcome to Beer and Business. You found the best podcast for entrepreneurs. We serve crafty business knowledge, comedy, and yes, beer. And now it's time for our hosts. If he were to pat you on the back, you'd list it on your resume. It's Jake Mullins, and his beer never gets warm. It just sits there, staying frosty, waiting for him. Mr. John Winnie. And if you spell his name in Scrabble, you automatically win. Ladies and gentlemen, it's Darren Flanagan.
Alex Lafredo Dietrich, I said it right. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, we're pretty excited to hear your story, but Alex, before we get into the wonderful twisted tale of your life, we got to talk about something really cool, which is the official beer of the Beer Business Podcast.
Yes.
We are drinking Lion Creek Brewing, the official beer, right, Darren, of the Beer and Business Podcast, it your is. Home. Actually, this is where Darren lives, pretty much.
At Lion Creek.
At the brewery, yes.
My home away from home is my other residence.
Well, your home away from home is the one you sleep in. Your home is Lion Creek.
Oh, you know.
So what are we drinking today?
What are we drinking? A couple of us are drinking First Crush, which is one of their staples. And then when
what
I went
Darren, drinking Jesus.
What?
What is it, Darren? It's an IPA, right?
Oh, gosh.
My yes, Lord. This is why IPA. Darren can't do sponsor hits, folks.
It's an IPA, juicy, tropical, hazy, and soft.
This and it's delicious.
First Crush IPA. This is one of their standard.
It's one of their first and their best
sipper.
IPAs.
It 6.3.
Yeah.
It's a good sipper.
It is. It is an awesome, this is an anytime beer. Anytime, any situation, if you're in the mood for a beer, you got to grab this IPA.
Pull over by the police officer, you reach over, you pull one out of the cooler. Yeah. Hold on, officer, let me crack this. I think we're going to be here for a while.
Yeah. Pretty much from sun up to sundown, anytime in that period, this is a good beer. Yep.
There you go. And then John is
we're also drinking Conserve Georgia. This is what is it, a lager?
Jesus Christ, are you kidding? It's an
that's
amber
ale.
It's
an amber ale.
I'm not even looking
amber
at the
ale. Sorry, I'm that's on my notes.
I'm
my
sorry, Lion Creek. I don't.
They call that their hashtag.
You knew what you were getting
series.
Into.
I found that out.
Signed the deal with.
But
us.
But the good thing about this is it $1 for every can?
Every six pack.
Every six pack. $1 for every six pack goes to the
Southern.
I'm reading the website.
Oh my God.
Southern Folks, Land Trust.
Just get Lion Creek. It's good. I mean, I guess we
Southern
just have to
Land
do that.
Trust.
Oh, my conservation. Gosh. I didn't bring my glasses.
Southern Conservation Land Trust, Mr. Winnie.
Yes.
There you go.
It goes to good things. Okay.
Good things.
The environmental
right,
things.
In focus. So
you can find these in your package store anywhere you go
both
now
of them.
On the shelves. And so
go to the brewery. It's awesome. Alex, we wish you were in town so you could drink some of this delicious beer with us. But where are you at now?
I am in Chapel Hill, North Kakalaki, North Carolina, for those who are speak normal. Yep.
And I know you're drinking a beer. What are you drinking?
I am drinking. So we have a brewery here called Top of the Hill. It's a restaurant brewery. And my favorite beer that they make It's called the Blue Tower Blueberry Wheat. And I kid you not, it tastes like you're drinking Fruity Pebbles that could get you schnockered. It's everything I wished for when I was five. And what I love about this is you have like a lot of chocolate porters or chocolate stouts and whatnot. And maybe I'm an uncultured swine, but I can't taste the chocolate in any of those. This one, you actually taste the blueberry. It's not overpowering, but it's enough that you can taste it. It's unique. It's delicious. You can drink it on any occasion. I absolutely love it. It's my favorite beer. Okay.
Now, how all sad right. is this? Alex sounds better describing beer than we do for our sponsor.
Is it is the label, is it Tar Heel Blue or is it Duke?
It is Blue. Tar Heel Blue. Okay. Hard Tar Heel.
Okay. Yeah.
So yeah, Alex, it doesn't matter. Our sponsor is Lime Creek.
Alex, would you mind telling everybody to please visit Lime Creek Brewing because I cannot rely on these guys.
Everybody, please visit Lime Creek Brewing because I guess they can't tell you.
Thank you so much.
Just had too many Lime Creeks already today.
And that was the last episode before Lime Creek pulled their sponsorship.
Should we just jump into this now? We should.
Alex, we wanted to bring you on the podcast today because I read two sentences of kind of your top level bio and I was like, oh my God, we've got to have this guy on the podcast. And I'm going to leave it at that. I'm going to leave everybody with a little suspense because I imagine you're probably going to be in stitches hearing some of this stuff. But your business is you help people that have a fear of public speaking. You help them overcome that. But it all started with yourself. You yourself used to be terrified of public speaking. So talk to us about that and when you realized that you needed to do something.
Yeah, it you know, when I was a kid, I grew up in Reading, Pennsylvania, and I was horribly shy. And when you're a teenage boy who's horribly shy, there's really only thing one thing on your mind, and that's how do I get girls to like me? And and I
luckily
knew that
you grow
I
out of that
to change. I just didn't know how. So the entire time when I was in Pennsylvania, I really did two things, and that was I would play copious amounts of video games, which didn't help my social skills at all. But I also play guitar and compose music. That was really my outlet. And I had this opportunity to move away from Reading, Pennsylvania to Richmond, Virginia. My mom moved down here. There was this really nice school called VCU, huge music scene. And I said, all right, well, if I have an opportunity to be able to pursue music and do that professionally and actually get charisma, because you kind of need that to be a musician. You know, most rock stars are considered cool people, and I was missing that in my life at that time. This is going to be the time to do it. This is going to be the time. So I made the leap. I moved to Richmond, Virginia with my mom and stepdad, and I said, all right, now I need to start working on my social skills. And it started out as me just walking down the street, trying to make eye contact with people, which was horrifying for me. I'd go home every night just angry at myself that I couldn't do better. And over time, I eventually found other people, though, who really wanted to do the same thing that I did. I was not the only person with the social anxiety, and there were a handful of people that I met through random encounters that wanted to pursue the same things that I did. And so what we did to help overcome our fear of public speaking is let me ask you, have you guys ever watched Impractical Jokers?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. So it is very much like that. So based off of honor system, we would dare each other to do really stupid crap. And at first it started out like pretty innocent, like, oh, go and say hi to that random person on the street. Okay, cool. You say hi. And then as things happen with young men, they gradually begin to become more corrupt.
Gradually?
Gradually,
like corruption. Within 5 minutes?
That's what I was thinking.
One of the first things, did you guys like, okay, we're all going to change our avatars in our chat room to our real photos. Did you guys start that way?
Well, I'll say it really leapt pretty quickly into me driving around, or my friend driving around in his Pontiac Firebird, and I would hide in the back seat. We'd place a blow up doll in the front seat, and I'd pretend to be the blow up doll and wave at people on the road, just to try to get kicks out of drivers. We got pulled over by the cops once on that one. So,
Hey, Alex, we're losing you. I think Hey, Alex, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Hey, we just like totally lost you for a second.
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay, cool. Okay, so you got pulled over by the cops.
Yeah, we got pulled over by the cops because we weren't speeding. We had a blow-up doll in the front seat, which, you know, last time I checked driver's manuals, that's not against the law, but it is what it is.
It's just a bit weird.
It might be considered bad form, but, you know. Anyway, so the cop pulls us over, and he said, yeah, that's an indecent exposure. You can't show nipple with the blow-up doll, so we got electric tape and taped up her nipple, and he let us go.
Oh my God, that's
hilarious.
Put
some pasties on her and keep driving.
Huh. Can you put a bra on your doll, please? So can I take you back just a second before you get back to more of your debauchery? How was it that you found these like-minded shy people? I mean, was it kind of happenstance or did you seek them out?
It's not like they could talk to each other,
right? That's my whole point. So
the dark web. We found each other. So the first person I met, I was working at Dick's Sporting Goods. This was the first job I got in Virginia, and one of my coworkers there noticed that I was pretty shy, and she reached out to me and said, hey, why don't you come visit my friend? So I said, okay, let me go over to this random person's house. And him and I, he's actually the Firebird guy. He and I ended up getting along pretty well because he was also pretty shy too. So that was the first person I met. The second person was, he actually lived in Pennsylvania with me. He was one of the very few friends that I had. And he got a job interview as a firefighter around Richmond, Virginia. And so he actually stayed with my family for a little bit, for about a year until he could get on his feet. And he, like myself, was also pretty socially awkward. And then when he moved out, he had a neighbor who also had an issue. And so we would go over to his house, smoke cigars, drink beers, and kind of talk about these things. And then that's how this group formed.
Interesting. Cool. So did you guys have the blow-up doll then, or did somebody have to acquire it?
The blow-up doll was before this, man.
Oh, boy.
The Pontiac guy had that blow-up doll for heavens knows how long. He says it was a gag gift from his uncle.
Sure.
It was a weird gift to get from your uncle.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was with you until you said uncle. And I'm like, whose uncle gets them a blow-up doll? All right. So you guys start doing this crazy stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Firebird, blow-up doll. What did this spiral into?
It spiraled into, like, what are some of the worst stories that spiraled into, or some of the offshoots?
That really helped you start to overcome your fear.
Yeah, yeah. And the reason why these stories do take a place in that is because we ultimately decided that so much of our fear came from not necessarily a fear of people, but it was a fear of being shamed by people. It's a fear of being rejected, right? When you talk to people or you try to sell something or you try to reach out to random individuals, it's not the person that you're afraid of. It's a reaction to you.
Sure.
And so we said, all right, well, if we can get over just feeling like total assholes all the time, then the fear. And so that led to the blow up doll, that led into the twerking in grocery stores and
what?
He said twerking.
Yeah, twerking. We invented twerking before it was cool. If it was ever cool.
In the grocery store.
In grocery stores, yeah. One of the dares that we had to do for each other is we'd have to pick a lane in a grocery store. It's normally the cereal box lane because, I mean, if you go to a grocery store and something falls, and normally it's the cereal lane. Mm-hmm. And we would have to back up against that honeycomb and drop it like it's hot. Yeah.
Because that's where most of the children hang out. So let's go into the cereal lane.
Well, you know, it's better they get scarred early on and build a tolerance to it, right?
There you go. That's exactly it.
Jeez. In 5 years, you're going to be watching YouTube, and it's way worse.
Yeah.
Embrace the twerking man next to the honeycombs. Oh, Jesus.
That's funny.
Yeah, that was one. There was one where I won't say the gentleman's name, but he was on a reality TV show, a judge on a reality TV show, and I had to cock block him. So that was
what?
Oh man, there was there was. I won't say what kind of art festival it was because it might give it away. But we'll just say there was an art festival, and he was a judge on a reality TV show. And I was at his stand and tried to talk to him. And he was kind of a dick. Just totally blew me off. I'm like, all right, whatever. And I go back to my friends and say, like, yeah, you know, I tried talking to this guy and he just kind of blew me off and was pretty nasty. And they point over, he was at a bar. The whole festival was in a hotel, and hotels, the good ones at least, have bars. And he was at the bar. My friend points him out and says, he's over there talking to these. They were total babes, man. Beautiful, beautiful women that he's talking to and just kind of hitting them up. And I looked over, I'm like, you know what? Screw this guy. I'm gonna test my luck. So I go over, I grab a beer. It was not a Topo Bell Tower Blueberry Wheat, but I sure damn wish it was. And I go up and he's talking. So he's sitting with his back to the bar and the two girls are standing up talking to him. And I take my beer and I walk right between him and the two girls. And I turn my back to him and start talking to these girls just like out of the blue. And they're just trying not to laugh. And they're looking kind of confused, like, did this guy just really do this to this dude? And he taps me on the shoulder and he's like, excuse me. And I turned to him like, you look familiar, but I can't quite put my finger on it. And I turn back and start talking to the girls. That's awesome. Away. But oh, it didn't God. Lead anywhere, but they were nice. So
that's
but
awesome.
I got my sweet revenge.
That's nice. Freaking sweet. Oh my God, that's like, so funny. You kind of look familiar.
Yeah.
Oh gosh. So you guys realized that it wasn't. It was more the reaction that you were afraid of and not anything else. And I think that that's really smart.
Yeah.
When did you figure that out? Was it early on or did it take you guys a while of doing this crazy shit before you realized that, oh, it's just, that's what we're really concerned about is how somebody perceives us.
Yeah. So what it came out of is our little group that we called, and when we get together and drink beers and smoke cigars, we call ourselves the Knights of the Square Table. Cause all these, you know, conversations happen at one of those cheapo square tables you would get at Walmart. And we would just talk about wax philosophy, right? Our views on life and try to extrapolate a lot of these problems that we were having on, we believe, an intellectual level. It really depends on who you are. And it just kind of came out naturally from one of those conversations that was like, you know, what are we really afraid of? And having those thought experiments, and we took that idea and ran with it, and that's what seemed to work. So we thought about, we talked about it, and then going out and seeing the empirical evidence of targeting that specifically and how that was helping build our confidence, that's really how that all came about.
So how long did this, we'll call it social experiment, how long did this experiment go on? Or are you still doing it to each other?
we're not as harsh on each other. If we get together, because we're all in different states now, we'll get back into the old shenanigans. But it's not nearly like what it used to be. I would say that whole series, that whole chapter of our life probably lasted, I want to say, 3 or 4 years before we split up. Just, again, going our own path in life. But yeah, it was a little while that whole thing was going on.
And how much did you change during that process?
Total 180. Really? 180. I mean, the person, I go back to Pennsylvania and see a lot of my old friends who knew me back when I was really shy, like the groups that I was kind of situated in. I barely even want to say friends because I was just kind of that quiet kid that hung out in the corner.
So the
people
on the
who didn't push me away, and they don't even recognize me.
Wow, that's good. That's good. Now during that 3 or 4 years, when you guys would reconvene, mm-hmm. And you could kind of, I'm sure you could see gauge where everybody was at their level of being more comfortable and whatnot. Did you? I mean, besides all the goofy antics, did you guys support each other and try to come up with other ways to help somebody else come out of their shell a little bit more?
Or was it just the three amigos?
It was in our group, it was the three amigos, and then we branched out to other people. And I'll start with just our group. So we were really supportive, but in a hard, tough love sort of way. Perfect case in point, there was a hookah bar that we used to convene at quite frequently in Richmond. And I remember going there with my friends, and one of the baristas I thought was this total babe. It was very obvious I had a thing for her. And the Pontiac guy, my friend, he said, if you don't talk to her tonight, you can walk your ass back home. Now, I live 20 miles away from the hookah bar. It was getting towards the end of the night, and I wasn't talking to her or anything. And so he picked up his keys and went outside and started driving away. And it took me until I called him and said, like, hey, man, I just talked to her. Can you please come back and get me? So it was one of those things, like, we would leave each other. We would say, if you're not going to do it, get out of the group. It was one of those that's like we've held each other accountable to a very strict standard, because I think once you need to maintain that bar of standards, right? You need to, more than anything else, it's that bar of standards that everybody needs to fight for. Otherwise, you're not helping anybody. And so that was our method of support. When it came to talking to people outside of this, and this is really where I would say this shenanigans, this tomfoolery, if you will, began to start taking the shape of a business. When I was in university, I actually went to school for art, much to my parents' chagrin. They were actually very supportive, but a lot of the students were doing freelance artwork and, you know, selling their work for dirt cheap. I mean, a painting that would take 50 hours to make, they would sell for maybe $100, which is,
oh geez,
wow,
it's ridiculous. Yeah, and because they were too afraid to ask for more. And I was getting involved in the entrepreneurship community at the same time. I was taking a certificate in venture creation and whatnot. And so I would begin, you know, when I would try to explain the business principles to the art students, it wasn't really clicking. Like, they could do the math. They knew they were making crap money, but it was the fear of asking, the fear of being able to do more. And so when I started helping with the social aspects of my fellow art students, that's when I saw a lot of progress. And then over time, I began doing that for local businesses and pitches and things like that.
So it's a very astute point, because I think a lot of people that, you know, specifically art, and we'll pick on artists, but I do see a lot of them early on really sell themselves short.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't know what the psyche is.
Well, you're a student. You're learning.
50
you're not
hours,
a professional painter.
And sell it for $100. You just made $2 an hour.
Yeah, exactly. You're a student.
Well just go.
But Alex's point is a really good one, because nobody's teaching these guys, like, no, don't give them a price. What's it worth to you?
Have a value.
Well, gosh, I'd pay $3,000 for that thing. Well,
you know what?
It just happens to be on sale for $29.99.
It depends on the person. You know, if I spent 50 hours on a painting, you'd be like, yeah. Yeah,
how much is in your 401k?
Yeah,
it's called your house. 50 hours painting for you is your house. Okay? And a lot of beer.
Yeah, there you go.
So, Alex, is that when you started to turn this into a business, or was this something that later on you realized that there was an opportunity to actually create a business model from helping other people learn how to speak?
Yeah, there were a couple steps that happened to this. So it started out with me talking to a lot of the art students and helping them out, and also boiling down a lot of what I found. Once I got over the shame, then there was learning actually how to converse with people, right? And so that turned into, I took learning how to talk to people, and I used music theory. So I made a lot of comparisons and used music theory almost as a framework for how I would talk to people. And then that led to a TEDx talk that my professor really, really encouraged me to do, much to my nervousness, if you will. And that then led into the public speaking aspect as well. All this happened in university, and there was a lot of feedback, a lot of positive feedback, and a lot of need that I noticed. And then I got a job in North Carolina after I graduated. And so it kind of sat for about a year. And after about a year of working at this job, which phenomenal job, pays well, it's work that I like doing. But there's a piece that's like, you know, I want to make my own thing. like it's nice doing this, but there's just a piece of me that's like, I don't want to ask somebody what days I can take off and what days I can't. I don't want to be told where I can and can't work. I want more freedom and autonomy, even if it means I have to work harder. And then that's when I was like, well, I was doing this in university. It seems to have gotten some traction. So let me play with this idea and see if I can turn it into something. And that's how it became a formal business as it is today.
There we go. He's got the spirit of an entrepreneur right there, baby.
Absolutely. And what's interesting too, is I think a lot of times there's like this, there's this idea of what an entrepreneur should be or is. Mm-hmm. And here's a great example of somebody that, you know, by default was very, very shy, mm-hmm. but also had that entrepreneurial spirit in them. And so,
and he had his friends blow up though.
Well, yeah.
I don't know.
I don't know that the, did he ever give you the doll or does he still have it today?
No, we actually made a, before you get any ideas,
they bronzed it in like a Han Solo in the second Han Solo.
Carbonate.
Depending, just be careful, Alex. Depending on what you say right now, there is just a load of jokes on the other side.
I'm ready to get slammed. We made a movie. It is not on any naughty adult site. It was for college. All pants were on all times. It was for one of my film classes. It was a movie about an evil fencer that stole a blow up doll. She was the heroine of the story, and then we had to go rescue her. And then we ended up stabbing her with a fencing sword, and she popped. So, her name was Olga. Rest in peace. Just for all you listeners out there, close your eyes, send some love to Olga. Raise your glass to Olga.
Oh, my aunt went the same way. Olga.
Pour one out for.
Well, I mean, honestly, it makes perfect sense. You said one of the things that you weren't good at or couldn't do and you wanted to get better at was talking to women. So starting with Olga was probably a good first step.
She's a crawl, walk, run strategy.
And then you realize
she's a good listener.
Oh, gosh.
She's a great listener, man.
She just doesn't ever shut her mouth.
She's a solid woman.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, we could have jokes about the blow up doll all day long. So I'm interested, Alex, kind of on a more serious note here. So you actually created framework on how to help people. So you took, you know, it's one thing to say, well, we did all these crazy shenanigans and turned to 180, but you had to take all the tomfoolery and turn it into a program that you can use to help somebody. Cause I doubt that, you know, somebody's going to come to you and say, yeah, I want to pay you to help me become a better public speaker. And you're like, awesome. Go twerk in the grocery.
Yeah. The cereal aisle.
And make sure it's a cereal aisle in front of some kids.
Right.
So how did you start turning what you had learned into a framework and what does that look like?
Yeah. So, the current framework that I use is, I'll work backwards. So the program that I do now is over the course of 7 weeks. And the first week is really about helping people get over their fear of public speaking, mm-hmm. or speaking in general, any sort of social interaction that could help them grow their business. And it was very similar. It harkens back to when we realized that it wasn't people that we were afraid of. It was the fear of rejection from those interactions. And so that whole first week is, you're not afraid of public speaking. You're not afraid of lead generation and you're not afraid of sales. You may be afraid of asking for what you want. You may be afraid of being the center of attention, right? And so how can we pick apart those fears, isolate them, and then attack those specifically, and then roll that back into public speaking or sales or lead generation, whatever you're afraid of in general. And it's pretty much classic exposure therapy, but more centered around social anxiety, public speaking fear. The second week, then, we go through speech memorization. Again, a lot of people like to try to memorize stuff word for word, but it comes out more authentic, more real when you're speaking from the heart, speaking on the fly. And a lot of people get nervous about doing that. So that we go into how do you memorize your points and be able to speak concisely and articulately. The third and fourth week, that's where we get into in-person and video presentation skills, because those are two very different worlds, but it's just presentation skills in general across those two mediums. Mm-hmm. Week five is that's where you get into the lead generation. So how do you get over your fear of rejection? How do you get over your fear of picking up the phone or emailing people or LinkedIning people or joining different Facebook groups or reaching out to people who have an awesome podcast that want to want to speak to you.
Let us know if you find one.
Thanks. Yeah, thanks, Darren.
Oh,
I was trying to throw you guys a bone, but all right.
It's friggin' Darren Flanagan. I mean, I can't help it.
And then what was it? Yeah, week six, we go into the sales aspect. So how do you ask for more, get over your fear of asking for more and do that successfully. And then seven is the storytelling aspect. So, you know, you can't sell and you can't ask for anything from anybody unless you can connect with them on a human level before anything else first. And what I mean by that is, you know, often we speak to people, discipline first, human second. So if you're a digital marketer talking to another digital marketer, you may say, hey, we have these awesome strategies that will boost your click rate by 20%. And it sounds nice. But what if you instead talk to them as a person first versus a digital marketer second, where you say, you have this really important message. And have you ever been in a conversation with a group of people and you're trying to say something, but nobody listened to you? You're constantly getting talked over. Nobody cares about what you say, but you know what you have to say could really help the group. Well, we have strategies that can help your message get across and boost your click rate by 20%, right? That's the kind of stuff that clicks with people more. Mm. So that's how we break it
down
today.
Darren's clicking on the table right now.
Well, I thought you were, honestly, I thought you were talking about.
Where is it?
Can I click on it?
I'm like, well, he's actually listened to the show because now he was just explaining how I feel each time we do a podcast episode.
It's Darren's hosting
experience. Nobody listens. They're always talking over me.
Yep. Well, you know what, Darren? I would love to have you as a client if you're interested.
There you go.
There you go. But all that came from conversations with the Knights of the Square, a lot of research. I frequent PubMed a lot because I believe if you want to be good at something, not only should you have experience in it, but you also need research. A lot of people just speak from anecdotal experience, but there should be some sort of empirical evidence behind it as well. And then the music theory, which helped me make sense of it as far as the conversational aspect and how you can have theories that apply almost universally to any situation instead of trying to expect what comes next.
I'm really interested in that. Can you explain that a little bit to us?
Without giving away your secret sauce, but yeah.
the music theory part?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that started out when I was playing guitar and, you know, writing music just for myself. And I was thinking like, man, music would be super, super confusing if all I thought this was a bunch of notes. Like, it's nice knowing that there's some sort of pattern. Mm-hmm. And wouldn't it be nice if conversation was kind of the same? And I'm like, huh, well, what if it is? And so just to give you some hard examples of what that looks into. So we'll take modulation in music, right? So modulation in music is being able to switch from, you have these things called modes, which is more or less a grouping of notes. And so some nodes or some modes will have different groups of notes than other modes. And they'll sound different because of it, because of the grouping of notes that they have. But if you want to go from one mode to the other without it sounding super clunky, one way that you can do that is look for common notes between those two modes. And so you hit that common note, and that leads to a transition into your other mode. So you get a totally different feel. Mm-hmm. Now, if we take this into conversation, a lot of people always think about, man, I always run out of stuff to say. And I say, okay, well, let's take a look at modes. So maybe you're talking about movies. And so in movies, you have all these different topics that you could talk about. You could talk about directors. You could talk about actors. You could talk about genres. And so maybe you're talking to somebody about movies and you say, you know, I really like Stanley Kubrick. Well, when you talk about Stanley Kubrick, that can lead into another mode of conversation, which now you're talking about his films. So Shining,
Space Odyssey,
2021, right? Like these different things. And then, you know, they're known to have really good cinematography, those movies. So now you take that and move that into another mode and you talk about really great movies with beautiful cinematography in it. And so you can kind of see where you can go from one topic to a completely different one by just looking at those commonalities that connect those different points. Does that make sense?
Yeah. It does, actually. And when you started to explain it, all I could think about is I went through professional media training and they call that bridging, where, okay, you know, like somebody will ask you a question about, you know, they'll say, well, geez, we hear that your company did something that's, you know, bad for the environment. And you'll say, well, actually, you know, we've got a lot of environmental causes that we support. And that actually leads me to a really good point that I want to talk about, which is our philanthropy. And then all of a sudden you use that to switch it to the point that you wanted to make. Jeez. Seamlessly. And they're like, oh, and you like completely lose
just
them.
Did. He took their negative and turned
that's
it into
Jedi
positive with the one
segue yeah. mind trick.
It's called yeah. the hook. Yeah.
Verbal Aikido.
Music.
Yeah. Yes. But they call it bridging because yeah. you take a piece of the question or a piece of the topic right. and then you use that as a common step to another topic, that just, which is something you really want to talk about. Mm-hmm. And you can use that in business too. Just
yeah.
It, I'm just giving what we learned in media training, but it's exactly the same thing. And it's yeah. actually very smart.
I thought he was going to go like, verse one, here's the first verse, chorus, verse, second verse, chorus, and here's the refrain. And now we're going to go into the coda, which is the same as a refrain or similar, but, you know.
But I mean, I guess, like, no, but no, now he's doing, you know,
that's
doing
awesome.
With words what Steven Seagal does with elbows, you know.
Just move some along.
Yeah.
You'll fly you like yeah. water. Water bend well.
It's like when you're sitting there talking to somebody and you say, touching me, kissing me, and then all of a sudden everybody goes,
sweet. Yeah, one of the top 10 yeah, songs. Yeah, one of exactly. the top 10 bar songs in the country. That's what it is.
Sweet. No, that's Caroline. Not what he's talking about. Yeah, actually, no. He's talking about conversation.
No, that's an excellent yeah. way to. Did that just come to you? Was it an epiphany, or was that something around the square, the Knights of the Square Table? Which, honestly, the Knights of the Square Table, the way you say it, even though you might be using the word drinking, you know, on that 70s show when they used to get together in the basement once a week.
Yeah. Yep.
But you're not in Colorado, so I'm sure it was just beer and
I thought
cigars.
It was a reference to like the old reference for being square. You know,
just
as an uncool.
Beer, Scout's Honor.
Just beer, yes.
That
it's,
makes
it's
sense.
It's called
too.
A play on words, fellas.
That. But he did say it was a cheap card table.
Anyways, yeah. getting back to where the hell are you guys going
he
with this?
He said square words? Was a reference, like a
back
reference
in the 50s.
For
guys, we're in the middle of a podcast cool. interview. Have you forgotten?
That's what we're trying to get to. We're trying to get to the basis. This is a
Alex, this is what an okay, so talking about communication.
No, we're talking about
this is what a normal communication is or a normal conversation with Mr. Winnie and Darren. It's like it goes all over the damn place. Well, I can't, it's like talking to wild animals.
Okay. Here's what John is talking about. Let me explain. I'll explain you. Linda, listen, Linda. Still a great video. But John said square, you know, square. You guys are the Knights of the Square Table. And you, Alex, was saying it's a square table. But John was using the reference as people being square.
As in uncool.
Uncool. So yes. Subconsciously, there may have been a reason, a second reason why it was called the square table.
I think you guys had just had a couple of beers and came up with it. Is that right?
Dude. We're philosophizing. Alex, are you still there?
Your philosophization is it's impressive. It's impressive.
So where do you go
they
from
didn't
music
take it
theory?
That deep, in other words,
where do I go from music theory?
Yeah. After that, I mean, you get them through that music theory. Actually, what's graduation like?
Graduation, like after they, like when like, I graduated, or graduation from the program?
If if you take a person through
from
your
the program.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then it's
one
like,
word, Darren.
They have their big test at the
He's
end,
looking
right?
for a one word answer.
Big test, pass. Pass big test at the end.
Yeah. So what we do in the program is towards the fourth or fifth week, I start having them look for a lot of them come through for public speaking is really the main thing that happens. Mm-hmm. I have them start looking for public speaking gigs around their area or virtual public speaking gigs, which is actually not that difficult. If anybody on here looking for public speaking gigs, you can literally type in Lions Club, Rotary Club, business networking events that need speakers. There's ways to find it. Mm-hmm. But one of their assignments is to find a speaking gig, and they're going to prepare for that about 3 weeks to a month out. And so once we go through the whole program, they should have a presentation or a keynote or sales pitch that they're ready to give. And then they can go out and actually do that at one of these events. And I would say that's the most common graduation. It looks different for everybody. But yeah, they'll go out and do that and realize that it's not that bad. And if they want to continue the program, which I haven't had anybody who wants to go through it twice, unless it's like just to go over and have me there to refresh more stuff with them. But yeah, it's really just getting them prepared for that first really big high stakes speech that maybe they have to make, or just getting out in front of people in general.
So I heard you say something there that I'd like to ask you about. So in your approach, it sounds like you've got framework. So you've got a standard framework that you take people through, but it also sounds to me like you customize the feedback and content towards the individual.
Yes. Yeah. Yep. Yeah. How I like to think about it is, like, people don't have – fear is not a one-size-fit-all thing. Mm-hmm. You know, everybody's afraid. If you have 10 people who are afraid of public speaking, they could be afraid of public speaking for 10 different reasons.
Sure.
Which one of the things that I don't believe in is throwing people in front of a crowd unprepared, which is the traditional way of getting over your fear. And a little side note, I saw somebody do that at one of their speaking events, and I felt so bad for the woman. She was terrified. We had to speak in front of 100 people as they split us up into groups. And this one woman was just super terrified of getting up on stage. And she was telling everybody, like, she's not ready to do this. And they just forced her up on stage, and she broke down and cried in front of 100 people and then ran off stage.
Yeah, that's bad.
That probably just worse, like, made her fear 10 times worse. So, which is why I think of the frameworks, these strategies, as this is the stuff that will get you 80% of the way there. It'll help us figure out what that other 20% is that you need to get over your fear, right? And so that's kind of how those two things mix together. So we have this standardized week by week, the things that we want to cover, but the exact specifics in which we want to cover in those weeks, that's why we have that one-on-one session. There's plenty of work to do in between sessions, but that's why we speak one-on-one, so I can customize that stuff and really figure out exactly how I can help you. And I even do the same thing when I do the free consultation with somebody. It's all about, let's look at the top things that are getting in the way for you, and then we'll work this around specifically what you need.
And it sounds to me too like you're not just helping people overcome their fear, but you're also helping them with skills to be an effective communicator in front of people.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, the reason why we focus, or why I focus on fear first, it's so much easier to have the conviction, because really skill, I believe, is 90% conviction. If you ever watch somebody ride a bike and they take a big jump, the reason why you can watch people like mountain bikers launch massive jumps isn't because they're good mountain bikers. It's because they're confident having the speed to get over that jump and not, you know, clip the back end of the hill. And so we conquer the fear first and foremost. That's where the main focus is, because once you feel confident, then you get the testicular fortitude to go after
big balls, John. Big balls.
That's not a PC term anymore. You can't say that.
What?
Oh, is that? Yeah, is that toxically masculine?
Yes, male.
That's horrible.
Anyway, go ahead. Sorry.
Please continue with your toxic masculinity, Alex.
But yeah, I mean, that's pretty much it. That's why it is really focused around fear. But we do cover skills, but that takes, you want to have a solid foundation before you start tackling the fancy schmancy stuff, you know?
Yeah, because I think there's a really important point here for people listening. So, you know, we started off this conversation talking about fear and the fact that you are really shy. And one thing that is very important to recognize in this conversation is that there are different personality types. So whether you're talking about the Myers-Briggs model or DISC or, you know, name them, there's so many different
personalities.
Yeah, they all work from the same kind of, there's four basic quadrants, and then there's all these different blends of where you could be on that spectrum. And there are people that are more inclined to be interpersonal and more comfortable. Mm-hmm. And so if you are somebody that is not as interpersonal, you're very low on that particular personality trait, it doesn't mean necessarily that you're going to be a bad speaker.
No.
Or that you're even predisposed to not to be as good a public speaker. Because I'll give you an example of this. I know people that are really interpersonal. You put them on a stage.
Oh, gosh.
And they just ramble and ramble. And you're like, good God, get them off the freaking stage. Well, no fear.
I think that there's a difference there, though. You're talking about getting up and giving a good public speech is a class in itself.
Well, no, I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about any communication, whether it's one-to-one, one-to-many, or some sort of formal formal presentation. Mm-hmm. The communication, there's two aspects of this. There's first the comfort and the conviction that Alex is talking about, but then there's the skill. Mm-hmm. And just because you are one personality type or you tend to be more interpersonal or less interpersonal, that does not predicate you to being good at communicating.
No, it does not. I agree with you. So I'm just saying getting up and talking in front of a group of people is different than talking with people. So if I'm going on a sales call, right, and you and I are having a conversation and we've experienced this with mm-hmm. each other, we get to the interpersonal stuff. We want to know a little bit about each other. We get each other comfortable, hopefully bring down a couple barriers. That way it opens up for a more honest exchange of communication as we get into the sales part of it.
Sure.
If I was sitting in front of 100 people giving a public speech, I'm scared shitless for a totally different reason.
Yeah, I get that.
I'm just saying he covers both.
Yeah, and I'm not trying to boil the ocean here. My only point in bringing that up is it doesn't matter where you're coming from, mm-hmm. whether you are somebody that is shy, mm-hmm. like Alex was, or if you're somebody that maybe isn't shy, but doesn't feel that they're effective or wants to learn. Yeah. There's no one personality style that's going to be better than the other.
No.
It's just a learned skill. It doesn't matter if you're a little fearful or deathly afraid, you can get to the same place, which is a confident, competent, mm-hmm. experienced speaker, whether it's public or one-to-one, because it is a learned skill.
I have I have no problem getting up in front of a ton of people.
They have the problem with it, though.
They do. It's usually because I forget to put pants on, but that's okay. You know, public speaking isn't a big deal, and being around just talking to folks, like you've seen tons of it. You throw me in any situation. But if there is an intentional, like women for years going up and talking to a woman, I had that fear. I still
have that fear.
Yeah. Well, usually it's because I'm waiting for the police officer to drag me away or I'm going to get it maced. But it's one of those. It's like, why is it in any other situation? Casual conversation. Yeah. There's that one thing. Maybe I should see Alex.
Maybe you should. I think
he could help me though.
Because you need some gender neutral fortitude.
But I'll tell you what, I've seen like my best friend when he was as my best man in my wedding. He is scared to death of public speaking.
Sure.
But when you have one-on-one, he'll talk to anybody and he's a great conversationalist and he can use the modes and move along from one subject to the other, and it's natural. But boy, when he had to give that speech, it was like he's probably like, well, he doesn't listen to the podcast, so it doesn't matter. I mean, there's only 20 people for the wedding reception. Mm-hmm. One was the bail bondsman. One was the,
I know what you're getting.
I mean, he just jumped up in the middle of everything, and he's just like, and may the roads rise up to blah, blah. And it's like, what is he saying? Like he was so scared to give that speech. I mean, it was like, and he used to feel the same way in the boardroom when he had to
So Alex, I'm sure that you've probably seen people going through your program, make those same 180s. Mm-hmm. Where do you find most of the breakthrough with people? Is it in one particular area or does it differ from one person to the next?
Surprisingly, I included the second week, which was speech memorization, because that's where a lot of people's sticking point was out of all the public speaking fear, which I didn't really expect. And I think it's so much of that is when people think about getting up on stage in front of people, it's how do I answer questions? What if I forget my material? what if I freeze up? Like when people think of that public speaking anxiety, that's what they're picturing themselves as. It's just pretty much standing up completely vulnerable in front of thousands of people and barely uttering a word. And so that's, you know, the speech memorization is kind of the black sheep of the 7-week program, I like to call it, but the one that I found was most necessary. And I think when people switch their relationship with how they present their material, a lot of those other fears begin to melt as far as the lead generation and as far as the sales. So that's, it actually surprised me. And that's why I included a specific week for it.
You know, it's interesting to hear you say that, because when you were talking about that earlier, I immediately thought about my own business, and I didn't even realize that I do this until you verbalized that particular thing about memorizing specific pieces. So I'll give you an example of that, because that sounded like a bunch of gibberish.
Actually, no, and I'm going to give you kudos. You are a good public speaker.
Well, thank you, Darren. But that's what I'm. Oh, welcome.
You pay me later.
here's my example. I hate call scripting. I hate it.
Yuck.
But in our business, we get a certain type of phone call on a pretty regular basis. And rather than script it, I created a framework. It's like, listen, here are the 5 points you need to make. And I kept it really, really vague. But what I do is I have like these little things that I didn't realize it, but I was memorizing. So if somebody asks me about a particular point in that call, I've got a response like at the ready. And I'm so used to saying it, it's right on the tip of my tongue. It flows off. It's natural. It's in my own voice. Mm-hmm. So somebody didn't script it for me, but I've practiced these things so much that when somebody asks me about it, it's like my answer is just so quick and easy, natural. I'm relaxed and it's helpful. And I didn't even realize that I was doing that until you verbalized it. But now that I'm thinking about it, that's been a huge help for me.
Yeah. And you know, that's what you just described is really the direction we try to take people. I mean, there are some pieces of a speech that do need to be memorized word for word, but it's like 2%, maybe a transition of some like tricky topics that you're trying to get between. But so much of it is, you know, it's hard to memorize a 20,000 word speech. Like if you're doing a workshop, it can be done. But the issue with memorizing things word for word is you're expecting what that next word is going to be. And if you slip up, now you've got to filter through 20,000 words in order to get back to exactly where you were. And so that leads people, and the longer you pause trying to find that area, that's when the anxiety kicks in. Mm-hmm. Because now it's not so much your focus is less about how do I get back to where my talk was. Now it's becoming, holy crap, this is getting way too long. It's super uncomfortable. And you can't focus, and then everything spirals out of control. But what you said is, how do you become proficient at speaking off points? And then on top of that, we also like to show you how do you make it to where you understand how every point in your speech is related to one another. So even if you get sidetracked by an audience member, like maybe you do something impromptu or somebody asks a question or you know, you're not used to audience distractions. So somebody goes up and has to go to the bathroom and the door shuts really loud and it snaps you out. Well, you know how all your points relate to one another. So you can hop back in anywhere and then quickly find where you're going again. And it comes off in that authentic. I really hate using the word authentic because everybody's like, oh, become an authentic speaker. But you know what I mean? Like that real, I'm talking to you, we're having a conversation. I'm not just reading
natural.
I'm not reading a script to you.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
it's just natural.
I'll give you an example of this. So in our business, I'll actually kind of step back a little bit too, because one of the things that I'm realizing as I'm thinking through this in my head is that I spend a lot of time thinking about those important things that I say at the moments of truth. So mm-hmm. those areas that are either big decision or they can be awkward or somebody might be uncomfortable. And one of those big ones is, you know, in our business, when we're helping somebody buy a house, it's like, I like this house. What do we do? And so there's that critical point like, oh gosh, I'm going to do this. What happens?
Let me pull the contract out and have you sign here.
Well, it's funny because so what I realized about this as I'm sitting here listening to you is that I have memorized the top introduction to a couple of key parts. So like one of the things I'll say to people is, hey, listen, you're going to get two contracts for me, two documents to sign. The first one is going to be an exclusive buyer brokerage agreement, which is required in the state of Georgia. And that allows me to be your real estate agent. And like I've memorized that top sentence and I always start there. And by memorizing that sentence, all the other points just naturally fall into place. I don't have to memorize them, but I never forget them. So it's like memorizing the beginning, the rest of it just all is there. And I've got a really slick way of explaining that. And I didn't even realize that I did that, but I do at a lot of those critical points. I'll memorize how the conversation starts. And then everything after that, I remember.
Try this one and see how you feel after you say it. Hi, my name is Darren.
Oh, God.
Well, then all you hear is click.
So just try it a couple times. Now you know what it's like going through me, you know.
And it's nice to meet you. I'm Kim, your public defender.
Go ahead, Alex. How does it make you feel when you say that? No. So you take them through that process of the framework. They're learning the key phrases, memorization.
Well, hold on though. Does that make sense to you? Like, you know, starting somewhere and then the rest falling into place. Like, do you train it that way, or am I?
No. Different? Yeah. How do I say? Yeah. Like there, when you have, we'll say the really important bits of your presentation. So maybe it's a sales pitch. There are like maybe one to three opening sentences that you really need to nail. When you pitch your price, you need to nail that because you need to be confident in your price. But then the other things, so, you know, let's say you're getting into the body of your presentation, right? I encourage people when they are working through their presentation, I encourage them to, depending on how long it is, write it out word for word and then extrapolate bullet points from that and then see if they can just run through the bullet points. So when you write it out word for word, you have an idea of what you want to say. But then when you pull out bullet points and then try to just speak off those bullet points, enough of your presentation is coming through because you've written it out word for word that comes out smooth. But then those little idiosyncrasies when you're standing up and walking around and saying it to yourself, you find little ad-libs or you find different ways of saying things that might be gold that now you might want to memorize that as well. And that usually makes up, like I said, about 2% of your presentation. But when you do that a bunch of times, you begin to be able to speak off the points really well. And then after you get good at that, we'll then take the points and we'll scramble them. So I say, I want you to speak on paragraph 3.2 and then switch back to paragraph 1.3 and see if you can make that connection. The idea being, are you able to connect, like see how every bit of your presentation relates to one another? Because when you know your material that well, you'll never get distracted. You'll never lose your spot. So we gradually ease people into, are you going from strict memorization word from word into, I know my material so well, like I have become the expert that I actually am. And we find out, you know, I'm sure if you talk about real estate to a random person, you can say all these, you know, say all these random things that make perfect sense because you know how they relate to one another. And we try to get people to understand, like, that's what your presentation is.
Right.
Is being able to speak to that level of fidelity without it becoming rambling.
Well, here, let me give you an example of how I think this could manifest itself. And I enjoyed your example of like pricing. Mm-hmm. So, you know, one of the things, I don't know why this popped in my head, but I just recently had, you know, this happen to me. So maybe that's why. But if you're a contractor and you get to that point where it's like you're walking through the process, like, yeah, this is going to cost X amount of dollars and I need a deposit. So, you know, you think about that person that gets really good at that one particular talking point because it's not a fun topic. Like, hey, I need some money up front. And I don't like this part. There might be questions. I might get pushback. So if you get really good at positioning that and confident, and you're used to it. And it's like, okay, great. In order to start the job, I'm going to need $5,000 up front, and that allows me to order the materials, pay for my men to get the thing started, and then you'll, you know, owe the balance upon the completion of the job. Now, if I said that and I was well-drilled, confident, and I sounded like I knew what I was talking about, awesome. Okay, let's cut you a check.
Yeah.
But if you're same scenario, even if you know your stuff better than anybody and you're like, I'm going to need a $5,000 deposit today. And you're like, well, you know, well, shit, if you question it, I do too.
Yeah. Like, yeah, no, exactly. You totally shit the bed when you ask it that way, because it's exactly what you said. And it goes back to one of the points that I made a little bit earlier is 90% of skills is confidence, right? Mm-hmm. 90% of skills confidence. That's why we tackle the fear first, because when you say, oh, my program or this car or whatever you're selling, whatever your business is, we'll say car, right? This car is $24,000, brand spanking new. It makes sense. But if they look at it and you're like, yeah, well, so this car, you know, it's around $24,000. And it's like, well, you don't seem like it's worth $24,000. Like it's up to them to decide whether or not they want to pay for it, or if they have the funds or whatever. And, you know, we can get into sales philosophy about all the other stuff that goes into handling objections, right? But ultimately, it's up to them as to whether or not they want to buy the thing. It's up to you to make it to accurately portray its worth. And if it's worth $24,000, you say it's worth $24,000 because that's what it's worth. And there's nothing wrong with that.
I kid you not. I had a conversation with, I won't name names, but I had a conversation with somebody that did some work for my business. And you know, I was talking to her and she's like, well, you know, how does $400 sound? And I'm like, not good. And she's like, well, okay. And I'm like, it's too cheap. I'm like, charge me more. It's worth more. Please charge me more. Like, yeah. Yeah. I'm coaching her into it. I'm telling you, it's worth more money to me. You can charge me more. Tell me it's more money. It's worth it to me. And I had to coach her into paying more for his service.
Well done. Like, well done, sir.
Like, Jesus, I'm actually.
That's what I think you're worth.
I know, but it's funny. And the reason why I did that is because I could tell that there wasn't confidence in pricing. And I wanted her to know, hey, the next time you have this conversation, you can charge more for this. And I would gladly pay it. So absolutely. Don't worry about it.
Is her name Olga?
No, it's not Olga. No, she was his terrible.
Good old Olga.
Yeah.
Good old Olga.
Terrible fencing accident.
Alex, I have a question for you. So you... when you started your program for people, I mean, you've talked about overcoming the fear of public speaking or just having conversations in general. Do you work a lot with, because what you're saying is you're taking them through a process basically to do public speaking is what I'm getting versus just being comfortable talking to folks. Do you get people from different categories or has your program kind of tailored, you know, you've tailored it over time to have that kind of direction for people to get up and talk in front of a group?
Yeah, man, you pretty much nailed it on the head. I've tailored it over time. It originally started as a program that was just like, how do you become a more confident communicator? And that, you know, when I actually worked with am working with a coach. And he helped me really narrow that down into, you know, these are the people that are actually going to make your business viable. And so over the course of many, many a month, I landed into that. All right, let's really tackle the entrepreneurial social skills. Mainly public speaking is the number one thing. But you see a bunch of people, you know, wanting to get more clients, wanting to get more sales. And it turns out that out of all the different ways that you can obtain clients and sell, if you're a service-based business and some product-based businesses, but if you're service-based businesses, I will say 95% of the time, public speaking will get you the most leads and the most clients out of any other lead generation strategy, more than digital marketing, more than going to networking events, public speaking, I think, will get you the most bang for your buck.
Oh, that's a powerful statement.
It's huge.
And I said it with confidence.
You did, actually.
He's been practicing it. That's one of his lines.
No, but I mean...
But no, seriously, here's why I say that. When you do digital, or actually, you know, let me do something that's a little more universal to anybody who's listening. Think about the last time it was your birthday, okay? The last time it was your birthday.
It was
now, you get three things that come to you for your birthday. You have your grandma, who you haven't seen in 5 years, shows up at your house, total surprise, and wishes you a happy birthday. That's number one. Number two is you get a handwritten letter from your grandma that says happy birthday. No money in it, by the way. No money in any of these. We got to make this even.
Damn it, grandma.
And then number three is you get an email from your grandma. Which of those three ways does that happy birthday really hit you the most?
Well, that's an obvious answer.
Sure, yeah.
Of course, it's
number one.
Yeah, the surprise, hey.
So a lot of people are really focused, and there's nothing wrong with digital marketing, but I've noticed there's a big trend around it without people having that core audience of people who really support them. Mm-hmm. And so what you get is a lot of entrepreneurs sending out mass emails, right? That doesn't develop relationships. That doesn't develop trust. They don't know who you are. You're so detached from that relationship. Why should they trust you, especially if you're just starting out? It doesn't make any sense. But if you can get up in front of people in person and share with them that energy and share with them your passion and your conviction and show them in real time why you're somebody who can be trusted and why you know your shit inside and out, 8 Ways to Tuesday, they're more likely to buy from you than if you were to type that out in an email or do some crazy expensive social media campaign, which, by the way, landing speaking gigs, you can get paid for that, but you're always going to have to pay for digital marketing.
Well, right? Yeah. And this is a really important point that you're bringing up. And I want to be fair because we've talked about all kinds of stuff on this podcast. Email marketing, digital marketing, those are effective channels. But I think the really profound thing is that what you just said, when you're starting out, you have no email database. Maybe you've got mm-hmm. your friends and family, but it's very limited. And the response rate on email is low.
Yeah.
And then your digital marketing, yeah, a lot of people gravitate towards it. But take it from me, guys, somebody that's done a lot of digital marketing, you got to spend your fucking hiney off mm-hmm. to get a return. Yep. It's there. But it's, you've got to have money to do it. Like you can't start at zero and digital market your way to a business. You've got to have somewhere to bootstrap. And that's where I think this could be extremely powerful.
Yeah. And to play devil's advocate, it's like, well, I could still do digital marketing and I'll just create a video of me talking about the products.
Yeah. The devil's in there, Darren.
Yeah. Isn't it? I mean, that's just...
I'll tell you a little story. This was probably like 15 years ago. Okay. I worked for a company and it was the COO of our company. And it was somebody that you didn't get emails from. So I didn't know this guy's face, never had heard from him. You know, the CEO and whatever like that.
Sure.
But I went to a company conference and he got up there and he spoke on the stage for like 45 minutes. And it was kind of, there was a buffet in the back, so I was getting drinks and stuff.
Shocking.
But I was walking around. I was looking for the teleprompter. I was looking for his notes and I couldn't see any. And he was so confident and he knew everything. And by the end of that speech, man, I was ready to follow him through wherever.
Yeah.
I mean, it was a powerful thing to see somebody that knowledgeable and that confident up there. People will follow you. They will buy from you.
Absolutely. And you know, I want to, let me make clear that I have nothing against digital marketing, but what I think about digital marketing is you need digital marketing in order to scale your business into something where you're not a slave to your business. But I think about it like this: digital marketing is a multiplier of what you already have. So if you don't have anything, you're multiplying by zero. It really won't help you unless you shell out a bunch of money. Now, if you have a solid base of, you know, we'll say 100 people, and then you use digital marketing, well, those 100 people are also going to be interacting with your digital marketing, and then that's going to, you know, make that look like it's gaining traction and expand it to even more people. So now you're hitting 1,000 people, but it's really because you have that core 100 group of people that are helping you push that you've met in person and doing that. So it is a really powerful tool. I have nothing against it. But I think it's really how, you know, if you want to grow your business with digital marketing, there is this component that you really, really, really need to hammer down first and foremost in order to really get that bang for your buck that you're looking for in your digital marketing.
You know, it's funny, mm-hmm. listening to Mr. Winnie's example reminded me when I worked at AT&T when we acquired Cricket. And so I was running this yeah. business unit called AIO Wireless. We called it AO. And we acquired Cricket, and we brought it all together and assumed the Cricket name. So after we did it, we pulled every single dealer store owner in the country together for this kickoff. And I was given the main speech at the end, you know, because I was the guy running the sales channel.
Little mm-hmm. did they know what they were in for.
I know. Yeah. Poor suckers.
Wait till the end so everybody's all drunk.
Well, here's... Yeah, I know. Thank you.
Forget the buffet. We need open bar in the back.
Let's get you guys lubed up first before I start talking.
2-drink minimum before you sit down.
But I'll never forget this because I gave a really good speech. And this guy came up to me at the end. He was one of the big store owners. He owned like, you know, 50 stores. Mm-hmm. And he walked up to me and he said, I got to tell you, man, that's one of the best speeches I've ever heard. He's like, I'm fired up. You're a natural. You are a natural public speaker. And I looked at him. I'm like, no, I'm not. And I'll never forget this. He's like, how? And he kind of looked at me like, how? Like the look on his face was bewilderment. And I said, listen, I'm not a natural speaker. I practiced this speech for 80 hours. And you know how I know? Because I kept track of it. And he looked at me and he's like, he didn't even know what to say. Mm-hmm. And so he's like, let's go to the bar. And so we went to the bar and he asked me, he said, that just blows my mind. You literally practice this speech for 80 hours. And I said, yeah. I said, it's the biggest speech I've ever given. Mm-hmm. I'm inspiring thousands of store owners that are going to go inspire their staff. I almost look at it like I didn't invest enough time in the speech. Mm-hmm. And then it really got him thinking, and that sparked a really good relationship and dialogue between he and I. But it's like, so, and I'm sure the COO that you're talking about, he it was probably the same thing. He was probably sitting there, you know, with post-it notes and shit in his office and practicing this thing forever. Sure. But then you go up there and you think like, gosh,
the guy was a ninja, man.
I know, but it doesn't, but it's not like people aren't born that way. Right. You rigorously practice your way to that level of execution.
You have to. Mm-hmm. You have to. That's the thing where people fail all the time with public speaking.
Yeah.
I gave a speech, 20-minute speech about how to give a good public speech or a presentation because I've seen numerous shitty ones.
Yes.
Even here at Launching Go, and I'm like, it's a pet peeve of mine. It's like, can you not really, you didn't practice enough, first of all. People think, I got my notes, I got my slides, I'll wing it because I know the material. And it's like, no. And especially if you open it up for questions or comments during your speech, as Alex said, you get thrown off. You better know how to come back to where you were and move forward.
Yeah.
So I like that point when you made that, Alex.
Yeah, man, I appreciate that. And that's, you made me remember a little saying that that I have is a boring presenter is a selfish presenter.
There you go.
You can't get audience engagement, it's because you didn't spend enough time practicing and knowing your material. If your audience is bored, it's because you didn't spend enough time learning how to make your material interesting. So, you know, if your material isn't interesting to listen to, then don't expect people to be interested in listening.
That's really good.
Yeah.
You know, the other thing too, going back to that speech I made when I was at AT&T, that like I did that, I practiced that speech in front of people multiple times. So I'd practice in my office, at home.
Oh, your poor wife.
I didn't. Listen, again. I value my marriage. So I didn't subject her to that. But I would do it in the office. I'd bring 10 people into a conference room. Okay, I'm going to go through the presentation, hold your critique until the end, give me honest feedback. And I'd hear things like, why did you do this? And well, this doesn't make any sense to me. And to Alex's point, it's like, shit, nobody's going to care about that. You're right. Okay, that's coming out. And I did. I tried to make it about the audience and make it fun and engaging. And that's it's not that I'm a natural.
Right.
Maybe a natural would have spent 20 hours practicing and I had to spend 80. I don't know.
No, you're supposed to.
But I worked my ass off to make sure.
5 minutes of a speech is like at least 20 hours of practice.
I view it, when you're in front of people, I view it as your duty, your responsibility.
You owe it to them.
Absolutely.
Exactly. They are investing their time, if nothing else. Well, even liquid lunch.
Right.
It was, those are free events, but we put a lot of time into that because
they cost us a lot in beer.
No, that's true. But I'm talking about the people that went. They didn't have to spend money on a ticket. We made it free, but they were giving us time and attention. So therefore we owed it to them to give them good content.
Here's a way to break that down. And this is what I do with that presentation that I have. I'm giving you 20 minutes of my time, right? My speech is about 20 minutes or presentation is about 20 minutes. But if there's 20 people that I'm giving that speech to, that's 400 minutes of time versus my 20. Which one is more valuable?
Exactly.
So,
that's
so how much do you cut them a check for when it's done?
Just enough. I usually just pick up their bar tabs at the end of the night. Do you remember? I'm going to not really digress, but I'm going to segue over. Oh, remember when we had Davey on?
There we go.
Yeah.
And so we had this guy on who is afraid of public speaking. And we have a couple people in our network group. We have Jake and I are in a network group on Tuesday mornings. And these people who are in, they have their own trades, but part of the reason they wanted to join besides the referral value is they're scared of public speaking. And they've realized they have to get up every Tuesday and give a 30-second to 1-minute pitch about who they are in their business. And they're doing it because they have that fear. And Davey's one of them, and we had him on the show. Mm-hmm. And what was it that his now wife had him pinned? What was the thing that he had to wear when he would go to a network thing? It was like, please talk to me.
Yeah, it was something like that.
This is his wife to help him get over his fear of speaking in public. And it was like,
she shamed him with a custom pin.
Please talk
to
me.
She would be in the corner like, kicking him out there, you know, you go talk to these kids or whatever, you know, talk to these people. And if she couldn't make it, then like one of her friends would be
his. I mean, luckily there was no blow up dolls, but yeah, he still got shamed. Right.
They're regular nights at the square table.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So Alex, I want to let our listeners know how to get in contact with you. If this is striking a chord with you and you want to be a better public speaker, Alex offers for Beer and Business subscribers, a free dollars consultation, a 30-minute consultation to figure out if there's a fit on both sides. And that's a huge discount because normally he charges $0. So for our listeners, it's free.
Free dollars.
Yeah, yes. So you see that, guys? We got to.
This is just a benefit of the Beer and Business Podcast.
There you go.
But Alex, people can get a free consultation with you to learn a little bit more about the program and whether or not you think there's a fit and they think there's a fit. How would somebody go about connecting with you for that free 30-minute evaluation, discussion, whatever you want to call it?
Right.
Consultation.
Yeah. So that free 30-minute consultation, I go over a diagnostic with you. Mm-hmm. We'll go over 7 key areas. We'll figure out where exactly your fear lies. And I make a custom workbook for you. Totally bespoke to you, that has 3 custom exercises that you can do to get over your fear of speaking or selling or wherever you're having the most trouble with. And I send that to you, totally yours. And you can contact me if you want to set that up. You can contact me at alexanderdietrich@galhad.com. My name's spelled kind of funny, so
we'll put it in the show notes. So if you got whatever,
okay, yeah. So just
whatever,
just shoot
podcast
me an email and say you're interested, and I will be more than happy to set some time up with you.
Yeah, awesome. Any podcast app. If you look at the details section, you'll see Alex's email in there. We'll include it. So shoot him an email. And
do you have a special website for people to go to that want to learn how to twerk better?
Against like,
you know, I'm thinking
Captain
about
Crunch.
Starting a YouTube channel, but I gotta get more squats in. I gotta show something for all that work. Yeah.
Can we get you to do a diagnostic on Darren and email it to me and Mr. Winnie?
Yeah, so
we'd love to. Yeah, let's
some gender neutral fortitude enhancement.
Some gender neutral ball busting.
That'll work. He's gonna be like, just I give up.
My crotch pronouns are. Yeah. Oh my gosh. There we go. Well, Alex, we're going to put a link to your email address in the show notes. We'll also do it on social, which I don't think really matters, boys, because we have effectively been shadow banned on YouTube and Facebook. I've done a number of exercises. Nobody's seeing us. So I've got a request. if you're listening, please, in the next week, tell somebody about the Beer and Business Podcast. If you think we're doing a good job, if you don't, just unsubscribe and go listen to boring YouTube.
It's a great gift for 2021.
What's that?
It's a great gift for 2021.
It is, and it's free.
Take their phone, say, hey, I want to give you this free gift this year.
Yeah.
Open up their podcast app, find Beer and Business, and click subscribe.
And just, yeah, just share it with people.
Their life will be
in all seriousness, we have done a number of episodes already within the past, well, since the year started, but in the past couple of months, really calling out truth to some things that are going on. And I think that that has earned us the wonderful badge of honor of being, you know, shadow banned, demonetized, and all of the above.
Oh, we go from one to the next.
They're trying to cancel us.
They're rotating us. It's rotating shadow ban. It's like a...
But luckily that doesn't work on podcast platforms, so we're good.
Yep.
Just tell people about us because they're not going to find us on Facebook because, you know, they don't like us anymore, I guess.
Yeah, oh well.
Alex, thank you. This has been fun.
Yeah, Alex, we really appreciate you coming on. This has been a riot, and I love learning about your story. We wish you all the best in the future.
I appreciate it, gentlemen. Thank you for having me. This was a blast. This is a phenomenal conversation. And, same to you. Just hoping that you guys figure out a way to slay that shadow ban because this, you guys have a great show here and, it was a lot of fun to be on. So thank you.
Well, you can do the same, man. Tell people about us because, you know, the tech overlords don't like us anymore, which, frankly, I don't give a shit. I just really don't care anymore.
I will.
Yeah, right. So thanks for coming on, Alex. This has been awesome. Folks, make sure that you are supporting the best brewery in the world, Lion Creek Brewing. Yes. Go to the brewery. Buy some beer at the store. You know, don't be a knucklehead. Don't buy bad beer. That's awful for everybody, isn't it?
Life's too short for bad beer.
Yes. Folks, thanks for tuning in. We'll see you next week.
See ya.